Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is August the 18th, 1999, and in Koinonia Creekside Room this morning is Luther Snow's session called Church Based on Action, number 99-7. Let's listen in.
Snow, and you're at the session in the series called Spark, where systemic change comes from, and today we're going to talk about church-based action, how to use churches and congregations as a source of social change. And if you're looking for the session on in Holden Village, that's somewhere else. Okay, well, we have some new folks here, so I'm going to do a quick kind of overview and introduction. The impetus for this class, the spark, if you will, has been my work as a community economic developer. Working mostly in low-income communities in Chicago over the years, and worked for one organization that you might be familiar with or you might not, called Bethel New Life, which is a community development corporation, nonprofit, governed by members of the community that actually spun off of a Lutheran church, Bethel Lutheran Church. It's unusual because one of the nation's largest CDCs now is coming out of the Lutheran Church. Not only that, but the Lutheran Church is located in, and the congregation consists of low-income African-Americans in West Garfield Park on the west side of Chicago. It's one of these churches that stayed when racial change swept through the community and decided to serve the new residents of the community rather than following the old congregants out to the suburbs. And, you know, we do things that some people would call miraculous, creating the first housing in the community in 30 years after years of disinvestment and discrimination, creating sweat equity co-ops of women sewing or men doing recycling, creating new holistic healthcare centers. And in my experience, people would say to me, you know, bank executives or church groups or my peers and colleagues would say, well, does it work? Can it make a difference? Can we make change? And I thought, first I thought that's a silly question. What choice do we have? We've got to do something. But then I realized that it's really the most important question. And in a way, it's the question that brings us all together. Because all of us are working for making a difference in some kind of way in our own lives, in our families, in our communities, in our professions. And we all hope that we can make a difference. And we all know the struggle that we go against when we try to change the status quo. And that's because I've concluded over time that the status quo works in self-perpetuating cycles, in vicious circles, in snowballs. And I started to look at that, and I looked at the machine in Chicago in politics, where the winner of the election gets the spoils of government and uses the jobs and patronage contracts to be able to reward members of a massive campaign workforce and then win the next election. Self-perpetuating cycle. We've been talking about these kind of self-perpetuating cycles in Bible study all week. It's been full of these kind of examples. We talked about some yesterday. I found these cycles all over the place as I started reading economics and literature and so forth. And how about in science? One of the books I've been reading the most lately, I've got so many different folders at the end of the week. Here it is. There's been a book about the origins of life by a guy named Werner Lowenstein. And he uses cycles to talk about how information is created and then captured in genes and RNA. Here's a little cycle that he talks about. Can you see it? Could one of y'all turn the right-hand switch off of it? So he's talking about organization and information coming in from the cosmos and then being repeated and carried out in circular flows by DNA, RNA, and protein, eventually going back into the cosmos. And this is my favorite picture I got from any book. Something he calls the circus. I don't know what it's a picture of, but it's basically information building up in cycles over time from asymmetric molecules to cells to complex organisms to the great complex things that we are today and our whole natural world is. Profound cycles there. You know, I've been thinking a lot about spark then, and what moves us from one cycle to another. What's the biggest spark you can think of? The Big Bang, right? Created the whole universe. Well, here's Stephen Hawking, that's a brilliant physicist, and he doesn't even think the Big Bang is just a one-time event. He thinks that the universe goes in cycles. It starts out with a Big Bang, and it grows over imaginary time. I'll tell that to my boss next time I'm late to work, right? But eventually it then starts shrinking. Time goes backwards, and we have the big crunch. And he thinks maybe this has been happening for how long, whatever started that whole thing. Okay, so that's the kind of general concept here, given it rough shot. Today we're going to talk about how we can make changes in the status quo through action, through congregations. And to do that, I want to get into something called asset-based community development. There's a couple of guys, John McKnight and Jody Kretzman, who actually got associated with Holden Village. Jody Kretzman has done this here over the years. And they're at Northwestern University, and I came to know them through my work at Bethel New Life, where they would come and try experiments and things. And the view that they have is all about the service industry and how the service industry depends on need for its own self-perpetuation. So let's go through this just for a minute. I got to do this briefly because I can do a whole session just on this, but it's a good intro to the church basically. Social service agencies, this could be any of the caring professions. They actually started by focusing on hospitals and that sort of thing. But it could be a service agency, it could be public, private, it could be for-profit, it could even be in some ways thinking about it, a school or something like that. That these agencies organize to meet needs and to correct client deficiencies. Right? We're going to heal the sick. We're going to teach the untaught. We're going to provide jobs to the unemployed. And so then what do? They assess and respond to community needs and deficiencies. So therefore, if you're in the community and you want to get access to this service and resource, you have to adopt the role of a needy client. A needy client to access services. And eventually the community comes to depend on agencies and professionals for services and resources so that every new thing is defined as a need, so that agencies and professionals can organize to serve those needs. And they would describe a burgeoning kind of professionalization of need in our community. What they would say is that that's kind of looking at a half-empty cup. And then in our communities, there is surely a lot of need, but there's also surely a lot of assets. That if we look at our neighborhood, for example, this is a geographic community, has a bunch of needs, it looks pretty pathetic. Right? Crime, child abuse, broken families, unemployment, everything's negative in this picture. We're looking at the half-empty cup. They would say, let's look at a different picture. I'm moving these real quick because we've got more to do today. Let's look at community assets. Look at the gifts of individuals, not just their income, but their talents and skills. Let's look at the strength of citizens' associations, which they distinguish from local institutions as being mainly voluntary. Churches would fit into that category. This is where we are today. And talking about local institutions, that these are assets in our community. And in more detail, we talk about people, land, and money as being assets. And so we break out of that cycle, and a lot of what we've been talking about here this week has been that if you want to break out of a powerful cycle that perpetuates the status quo, you need to put another cycle in its place, a healthy, positive cycle. So here's their healthy, positive cycle, what they would suggest, that community members identify our own assets, that we use our own assets to develop more opportunities and assets. Almost a business-like model in that sense, like capital investment. And that these development efforts provide opportunities then for partnerships with outside resources. Because once we identify what we have and what we want to do, we can identify the gaps in that and fit it together in a way that will create new opportunities. Those partnerships create even more opportunities and increase the available assets to the community. So we build a cycle of growth based on a positive notion of assets instead of a negative notion of needs and deficiencies. Now, I have to say, most people like this, whether or not they agreed with the initial analysis about social service agencies as self-perpetuating. And I also have to say that their observations are systematic. They're not talking about the motivations of any individuals. And folks I know in the caring professions are actually not so much self-perpetuating as much as they are sacrificing of their own personal welfare and resources to be able to work in those fields. So don't get upset about that. Let's focus on the positive aspect of it, which is about building on assets. And so what if we think of our churches in terms of building on assets? The assets that we might choose to look at might include what? Somebody give me a general category of assets of a church.
People.
Okay, good.
Building.
Good. I got one more major category.
Money.
And then you can think of kind of subcategories here. This could also include other property and space, land.
Right.
And to give the accountants fits, okay, when we talk about money in a church being assets, there are two types. One are assets, financial assets, and the other is income and expense. And I laugh about this because, of course, you know, there's the balance sheet, there's the income statement, right? And the assets go on the balance sheet. They don't belong on the income statement. And here we are talking about income and expense as assets. But they could be, if you think of purchasing power, right? We have a budget, and we can use that budget as an asset to our community and to our congregation in the way that we spend it. And here, when we talk about assets, then we can use, these of course are all assets, but we can talk about capital. Maybe there's an endowment, or even if there's just a checking account, we can invest it in ways that can be positive. Yeah?
I think something maybe it's more abstract, but already, maybe, hopefully with the church, a built-in sense of mission.
Yes.
And desire to serve.
Yeah.
The community.
Put that over here. That doesn't really come in the way that they put it, but I like to think of that as separate from the individual skills of the people, and then there's something about the group skills, the combined skills of the folks, the sum being greater, the whole being greater than the sum of the parts. People's Church over here is located in a low-income inner-city neighborhood. On the city's border with the wealthier suburbs. It's predominantly African American. They have a small group of congregation members hold over from the old days before a racial change. They've got active choirs, youth and senior groups, other activities. They have a dedicated group of folks, but they are poor in other ways. They've got a $250,000 annual budget and a checking account, but there's no endowment. They have the facilities of a church building, but it's in need of extensive repair. There's some office equipment, a bus, they have land, they have three vacant lots, all in this disinvested community area. Let's ask the folks in this group what you came up with as possible development ideas. And we'll write them over. Go.
I'm going to be limited to the three.
I'm going to write down three, and why don't you list as many as you can.
Well, for use of building, a child care and alternative high school seem to go together as one priority. Use of the vacant lots for community gardens was another one. And the job training, tutoring, place for community groups to meet.
Okay, and that's using what asset?
That's using the building.
That's also using the building.
Yeah.
A place for job training. And what are you missing then?
Well, we were missing. Another one that we had was the minister's residence as a possibility for a communal living. And what we needed was someone to show us how to do that. And we identified the asset of the Lutheran Volunteer Corps to come in and set up and be kind of a core of that communal living.
Okay.
We identified for the building repair that we needed the material and skills to do those repairs. And we identified the need for a grant writer to get funding for our child care alternative high school, et cetera, et cetera.
It's actually really interesting. They're in a poor congregation, and the one thing they didn't list as an asset that they need is money.
Just the grant writer.
That's good. I'm not criticizing this. I mean, and this is important because you got to go a step. Okay, we need to fine, move it. It'll be in the way of somebody else. Sorry. We need to rehab a building. What do we need? We need the materials and the labor. We don't actually need money. Money can buy materials and labor, but if we can get it another way, that's just as good. If we can get donated materials, then we don't need the money. The most clever thing he did was say, well, what we need is a grant writer. So that's another way of saying we need money. And as a grant writer, I can tell you that you first need to know that there are sources of funds that are appropriate to your projects. And they are fundable. But, okay, so that's good. So you get a sense of that. Now over here, we have a different congregation, right? We have Faith Church. Faith Church is located in an upper middle income suburb, which borders low income communities in the city. They have land, they've got extensive facilities, office equipment, linkages to programs like a daycare center and some social missions, and a knowledgeable congregation of people who have professional and business skills, but who are unaware of opportunities for community economic. They've got a $350,000 annual budget and a $500,000 endowment. Okay, so what did you all think were possible projects that you could develop?
Well, one we thought was, which I'll call now an entrepreneurial center, where we could have people available who could mentor folks within the low-income neighborhood in starting a business or other entrepreneurial opportunities, that we could also perhaps provide seed money to do to help businesses be started.
Okay, so the assets that you're using are skills of congregants?
Skills of congregants and financial.
Money. Let's use that word. That's okay.
Sure.
All money, isn't it?
Okay, next.
Another one is to provide job interview assistance, which could be in the guise of clothing that people in the congregation could, after we had amassed a quantity of good quality clothing, we could offer personal service in helping put together a job interview outfit, and that also going along with that could be educational things about interview preparedness, resume, presentation, etc.
Okay,
so that would use our assets of, again, people of our wealthy families that would have nice clothing to give and would need some kind of facility to put all that stuff in.
So you use space.
Yeah, space.
And no money. That's free.
Right. Another one we mentioned was scholarship money that could go for our church camps or for college or for our own child care center. So that's primarily money, and then also linking to our child care center and other, perhaps, church camps or other things.
Great. Excellent.
So
what are you missing?
So resources we needed, especially leadership, pastoral support, and also lay people, under the subheading of leadership, vision, communication, and motivation.
Is that all?
Okay.
Also time to commit, that all of these professional and business skilled people are also busy, and so finding people who have the time. We realized maybe some people will be retired, but their time is limited too. And then third, relationships beyond our constituency. A reputation so that people know there that we're here. Actually, I just thought this week, as you all were talking, that perhaps we could have a sister church with Hope Church in the other community. So that
you thought that, did you? That's a good idea, huh? Let me, before I get to that, let me just ask, which one has a harder job?
We do.
We have a harder job.
They won't buy it.
Huh?
Your people will buy it.
Do you agree on this, or are you arguing about it? Who's got the harder job? They do.
We have
the rich folks.
Yeah.
The privileged people. Because of this vision, communication, motivation thing. We can get money, huh?
Sure.
Most of the people in our church think that the social mission committee is nuts. And we've lost some of those people to other
people. Keep track of them, small towns.
That's right.
Well, and obviously here, there's some potential connection between these two congregations. What one needs, the other one has, and what the other one has, the other one needs, right? I mean, y'all have all this stuff, but unless you get some investment, you're not going to be doing any rehab, right? You might even have local skills. But you need to have some investment of funds if you're going to repair those buildings, right? These folks, you can do all these things all you want, unless you get connection to the people in this community, it's not going to go anywhere. You'll be empowering yourselves, right? And that's not really the point. So many of these books about community are all about building community, as if you were this. And then the people that are reading them are really over here. So why are we empowering the powerful? That doesn't make sense to me. So there has to be some kind of thought about partnership. And instead of a role and a relationship based on need and service, which is where social mission committees often go, let us make contributions to Hurricane Mitch, you know, and let's make contributions to this other place. Instead of that, what if we're thinking about partnership? If we think that the problem isn't here, and it's not even here, the problem is that system, that cycle that perpetuates itself, then we both have a role to play, the privileged and the disadvantaged, in breaking out of that cycle and in creating a new cycle that's positive. Let me just to supplement your let me ask questions, comments. Do y'all want to talk to each other at all here?
So you're saying for these two churches to get together,
yeah,
somehow, and
yeah,
combine, yeah, it, just all this stuff, and
sister congregation.
Forget about, you know, this is our church's project or this is their church. I mean, it's all the church of,
right,
Chicago. Or
how could that
church
happen? How could these two congregations get together?
Pastoral leadership.
Okay. Be more specific.
Synodical leadership. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, what do they do? What do the pastors do? Get together and have a Bible study?
I think
pray together?
I think the pastors can be tremendous role models for the pulpit exchange.
That's a start. Pulpit exchange.
Potlucks.
Food. Hey, really, people, social things will bring folks together and start to break some of the walls in.
We had have an example of an actually Faith Church. No, it's Hope. Somebody mentioned Hope. There's a Hope Church in Wheaton, Illinois. And there's a Hope, which is of course white, and that's a wealthy suburb, and a Hope Church in South Side of Chicago, which is a black congregation. And those two have been partnering now for, I think, at least 10 years. It's a long, slow, hard process.
Long, slow process.
But we attended a celebrative worship service in Hope Wheaton, in which the Hope Chicago folks came out and had a combined service with the combined choirs And it was, you know, they had people dancing in the aisles. And the whole Wheaton Church, you know, of course, they're all sort of uptight. But the kids, just to watch the kids, they were dancing down the aisles. It was wonderful.
And it snowballs. It over 10 years, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Who's heard of, I'm sorry, back there.
I just have a question. We were talking about where do you start?
Yeah.
Say with pastors.
Yeah.
Where do you start when the pastors aren't all that fired up? And there's all these meetings to go to, and three people are dying, and they're planning funerals, and,
sure.
and they're not that enlightened anyway.
Sure. Right.
Find a new
Any
answer?
Find a new church?
Well, exchange your choirs instead.
Yeah, right. It can be the other. Leadership is important, obviously.
One way or the other.
Yeah.
It has to be some leadership.
Have people teaching Sunday school classes in the church.
We've talked about a lot of social things. Have you heard of the Sister Parish organization? Now, these are partnerships not just between two communities separated by a few miles, but between congregations and sometimes groups of congregations in the U.S. and in third world countries, Central America in particular. We got a woman here, Vicki Schmidt, who's, I don't know, Wisconsin coordinator or something like that. And they build sister congregation kind of relationships with communities in Honduras that have been hit by Hurricane Mitch and that sort of thing. And the first thing they do is social. I mean, the first thing they do is they go down there and they don't give out any money and they don't even volunteer to build a new building or whatever. They go and meet people. People, 12 people from this congregation go down and meet people.
And they live in their homes.
They live in their homes. Absolutely.
But that
they
might
get established relationship.
Just imagine, though, inviting some of those people into your home.
Wouldn't that be something, huh?
It's almost more comfortable for you to go to their home.
But eventually this happens. And eventually they do get involved. Because then the projects are selected based on people's relationships and their trust and their understanding of assets in both sides. There's another organization in Chicago that's just set up to do intermediary, Vision Chicago. And there'll be people from congregations both in and outside of the city who call up and say, I want to volunteer somewhere. And they hook them up with congregations that say, we need volunteers. And they make that happen. So it's easier if there's some sort of an intermediary. If there isn't an intermediary, you've got to find some other kind of relationship. You've got to find somebody who knows somebody there. There's somebody at, you know, at your workplace, or there's somebody who's, you know, a relative of yours that lives over there, or there's some sort of personal social connection to make it happen. I was talking to a doctor, well, a hospital, everybody comes to the hospital, and maybe there's a connection that can be made there on the softball team or something. You see what I mean? Let me give you some sense of other kind of partnership thinking here. This again is from this book about asset-based community development. Come on, I'm going to use a little bit tomorrow, too. Say, can I show people this book? And while I'm thinking about it, here's this book. This is, I have a copy, and you can look at it. It's on reserve at the Holden Village Circulating Library over there. And it's called Building Communities from the Inside Out, A Path Toward Building and Mobilizing the Community's Assets. And they gave me a bunch of brochures here because they have a whole series of workbooks about different parts of this. And while I was at it, since I was doing church-based action, I got this article about the faith community as a green zone, for those of you who are interested in the environment. So here's their proposal about partnerships. And they're talking about partnerships not just between congregations, but between religious institutions and other aspects of community, maybe that community asset map. So,
who are they?
Okay, they, the authors of this book, McKnight and Crespin, are talking. This is their graphic about how a religious institution can play partnership roles. And just for creativity here. So, partnerships with the schools. The Urban League connects churches with schools through an adopt-a-school program in which local churches provide tutoring for neighborhood school children. Here, youth, the church invites a children's nursery school to become a tenant in its building, not at all uncommon. This newly expanded children's program helps the church to meet its bills and provides an opportunity for leadership by placing church members on the school board. Leadership development. local businesses. A neighboring church provides space for the meetings of a local business association. Then this relationship goes a step further, snowballing, when this church advocates for fair hiring practices and the establishment of a local code of business ethics. Here we go, a neighborhood association. Several local block clubs meet together at a neighboring church where the congregation works with them to inculcate family values and create a greater sense of shared experience. And you think that's something? Look at this. Once you do that, the possibilities are endless. And I'm not going to read all these, but look, tenants organizations, the police, to the daycare center, to a homeless advocacy group, to a community development corporation, substance abuse center, colleges, let's read colleges. The college makes available classroom space for language classes, and the college provides teachers and materials for ESL classes attended by community residents. Your community-based organization provides meeting space, and the community CBO provides opportunity for churches involvement in the neighborhood. What do you think happens to a church that gets involved in these kinds of things? Does it take time, energy, and money away from the church and from mission?
It empowers the church to be more active.
Has anybody seen that? Has anybody seen this kind of thing revitalize the congregation?
Paul and Marines, their congregation, they used to live in our small area of Decorah. They moved to a beautiful suburb north of Milwaukee, Bayshore, which is a very elite, it's where all the baseball and football players live.
Oh, is that right?
And so they did the same thing, which was kind of a stagnant congregation of great wealth. And they have Martha's Church right in the heart of Milwaukee. And it's changed the whole congregation just in about 2 years.
Wow. Increased membership? Increased involvement of current membership?
I suppose. Well, their biggest thing was involvement.
Yes.
Because it had a huge role and low involvement.
I read Parker Palmer one time talking about the loaves and fishes. And that's essentially what this is about. It's like, we're nail soup, right? Everybody starts to put in, we're hungry, we don't have anything. Once you start to create this spark and you build this kind of partnership, suddenly people find more and they create more together than they ever had individually. So I'm not prescribing any of these. And people keep asking, so this is how we make change. No. That's not the point of this. The point of this is that these are ideas about how to break out of a cycle and how to get into a new cycle. The only prescription I have is the one cycle that I think is the most important, which is what all this is about, and that is this one. Your action creates hope in other people. And that hope in other people inspires action, you and others. So that's the only prescription I really have here for making change, breaking out of a cycle of apathy or cynicism and violence and degradation into a new cycle of action and hope. And that whatever you do, whether it's in your congregation or with another voluntary association or within your family or individually to create a new stage in your own life, everything we do there is contributing to hope in others. Because if you can do it, they can do it, right? Just like you get hope from the examples that people have given here today. And that spurs you to action and so forth, and we can build a larger positive cycle to create more positive things and get out of the negative things that we're sometimes so often trapped in. So that's my only prescription. Everything else is description and nice ideas for you to think about as you're trying to strategize. Yeah.
As I'm listening to all of this, isn't this what Biblical Jubilee is all about? We have a rather solid, for me, pretty solid biblical base for all that we've been talking about. I think this is what God really was intending.
Are you talking about the Jubilee debt?
No, not Jubilee 2000. I'm talking about
Biblical
the
Jubilee.
The Biblical Jubilee in Leviticus. And that, I mean, I think whether or not it ever was carried out as it was defined in Leviticus, for me, is really not the point, because the Bible tells us all kinds of things. For starters, to love each other, and we don't do that very well. So just to say that the Jubilee plan of that was described in the Bible, because just because the Jewish people or Israel never really lived it out completely, okay, does not
so
invalidate.
Just the concept of Jubilee, that every 50 years debts will be forgiven and property restored and so forth, is itself about breaking out of cycles.
Exactly.
The recognition that institutions tend to perpetuate it themselves, that things can create a life for themselves, as we've been talking about in Bible study all week, and that then in order to do that, we've got to break out and create a new cycle.
But then the big question is, we've got all this stuff, a lot of us, in the churches, but have we not yet broken out into the action?
Right, but I think there's all I'm saying is that I believe that this is God's will for us as church, as people of God, to do what.
Sometimes I feel like we're stuck.
Well, we are.
So find hope in the action of others. Find hope in the stories of people who have, you know, just the idea that this was harder than this, right? I mean, itself is instructive. Mm-hmm. I mean, we watch Jonathan Ferrick's stories about people in Honduras who had everything wiped out by the Hurricane Mitch, and they're rebuilding. If they can do that, can we clean out our closets? Right? Right? And then, if we clean out our closets, can we exchange choirs? Right? And if we exchange choirs, well, if they're willing to come here, we're willing to go there, right? And just, you got to replace it with a positive cycle. Yeah.
For me, it's just a matter of thinking how persuasive invitation is to me. If somebody says, come do this with me,
mm-hmm,
and if I can change my behavior from quitting yelling at the mainstream, you ought to do what I think you ought to do, and can just go ahead and invite some folks to do it with me, I would be so much better off. I just fall into the trap of yelling at the mainstream, you've got to do it the way I tell you, you've got to do it.
Well, I'm not going to propose, again, that we don't yell at the mainstream. There's a whole other thing that I do here we don't have time for about the difference between kind of inside strategies and outside strategies. But the power of invitation, I really like. I mean, you don't know until you ask. And sometimes when you ask, things happen, you know?
The answer is always no.
Yeah. And people like to be invited to do stuff. So go ahead and invite them.
We are sister congregations in Estonia, and when they
In Estonia? Well, it's not just Central America, then.
Oh, no. Mm. So, we decide that, well, it would be important for us to go there, and it was so incredibly expensive, I just knew I wasn't going to be able to go there. And, you know, when we got on off the plane and they hugged us, it was just amazing. And then the opportunities just open up, and the American dollar was so good there, so strong, they could do so much with it. People asked us just to look at it. And, you know, just overwhelming of what being an occupied people was like and how that affects what you think you are, who you think you are, and what you think you can do. And when the Russians left, they left in a fairly nasty way. And the kind of damage and when I think, you know, what they have given us and what they offer us, and we constantly talk about, well, we ought to be sending them something. We should be doing something. And that connection has been really important. And it all started with an invitation.
That's it.
And getting down to a local level, I want to mention this one thing. I don't know the history of it exactly, but we have a huge concern in our town. It's called the Depot, and it was really started by the churches, if I have my history right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge clothing
store,
but it has every kind of cooking. I mean, when I have a garage sale or when I clean out, that's where I take my stuff, and then people come. But they take such good care of it, and they hang it up, and it's all sized. Now, that's grown from a tiny little room that I remember 32 years ago to a huge complex that really has been all the churches together providing volunteers, and it's a whole long story, disabled people that work there. I mean, in that we have to give ourselves credit. That took a lot of time, but it really has been quite something for the community.
And doing that at a local level can inspire. inspire you to sister congregation with Estonia, and seeing what they do in Estonia can inspire you to change in your personal life and in order of priorities.
Well, I think telling the story, or just what she's saying, yeah. Sometimes we have terrific success stories. Our church years ago, the ladies group started a program that is now has been active for a long time that helps women who have just gotten out of prison. It's a halfway house to help them reintegrate into society. It's a great program, but it's one that is in the communal memory of the people who've been in the church for 20 years or more.
Right.
And so every few years we have to tell that story again, so that people
yes.
know that
that's
our church
important.
Started that. Yeah. That's an action that we take hope from.
Right.
When we have something else that comes up, that look, we did this before, we can do something else now.
Yes, we've done it before. Yeah, we can lose that. We don't keep it up.
One more story, if I may.
Yeah.
Of this back to this hope church, the Hope Church.
Hope and Hope. I love that.
And the pastor of the Hope Wheaton Church was a pastor previously in South Dakota or something. Anyhow, and in that instance, that church had been related to a church in Germany.
Uh-huh.
And so last year, a group of people from, let's just say South Dakota, Germany, Hope Wheaton, Hope Chicago, all got together and spent a week or two together.
Wow.
In Chicago, that was their locus. Mm-hmm. But that was, you can just imagine mm-hmm. the kind of experience that was. It was really pretty remarkable.
Sure.
So all kinds of wonderful things can happen.
Tomorrow is money and markets. We're going to talk about job development, entrepreneurism, self-employment, industrial development, the whole range of things, and how you break out of cycles in those views. And then Friday is the Change Clinic, which is where we're going to take problems, or a problem, or more than one problem that is identified by one of you in real life experience, and then we'll try to be group consultants and use some of this change theory to see if we can generate some new hope in those situations. So if you get something you're working on and you could use some help, bring it to that. And if you want to be a consultant secretly in your life, then come to that. And that'll be on Friday. Thanks very much for your participation today.
Thank you.